many centuries, men believed that the atom was a basic building block of the universe. When the Curies, Lord Rutherford, and Dr. Einstein discovered that the atom itself consisted of separate bundles of energy. The followers were able to split the atom and discharge these bundles of energy to the benefit of all mankind. As with the atom, so within the human being, there are unexpected areas of energy, spiritual energy, of conscience, of sympathy. Courage and of thoughtfulness, of sensitivity, which make us distinct from all other life upon this planet. The challenge which is ours is to instill those energies so that they can fuse our being and become dominant in our position, in our personalities. And ancient piety has it that this day, Rosh Hashanah, was the first day of creation, and it celebrated the birthday of the world. Ancient legend says that on the original birthday, the angels assembled with us the ability of creating man. The angel Love argued for the affirmative. He said that love would build stable societies and establish far-reaching, fascinating civilizations. Through love, man would seek to develop the beauties of life. The angel of love was eager that man be created. The angel of wisdom, too, said man should be created. Wisdom spoke of the thousands of libraries men would fill with their learning. He spoke of the outer reaches of darkness which man would penetrate with their minds, the grand inventions and discoveries which man would make, and the religions and philosophies which men would devise. Wisdom and love joined in advising God that man ought to be created. There is, however, there always is, a dissenting angel, the angel Truth. The angel Truth suggested his fellow angels take off their rose-colored glasses and remember the evil capacities of men. Do not forget that man will chain his fellows with the fetters of oppression, he warned. That he will brandish naked steel to enforce his will. That he will use the whip, to enslave those less powerful. The angel's Truth spoke against the creation of man. God weighed the pros and the cons, and man was created. In defense of his decision, God argued that he had placed within man the spark of his own divinity, and that when man learned to fan this spark into a flame, he would have the capacity to confront the dire prophecies of truth. We have within us energies equal to or greater than those of the atom, but we will only allow them to become dominant in our lives. There is nothing inevitable about our world, about the separation of class, caste, and race, with which men disturb their lives. Man can overcome these if he will but use their God-implanted energy to direct his life in useful ways. When men set out to break open the atom, he built giant reactors. In those fiery crucibles, the fabric of the atom could be disintegrated, and the atom and its energies let loose. We cannot create a human crucible, yet I wonder if Rosh Hashanah is not in its own way a giant spiritual reactor. The mood, the music, the stock-taking, the prayer, and the concept of a day set apart from our usual routine business. Somehow fan the flames of the divine within us and throw us a sense of the spiritual greatness which we can assume. The youngster once captured for me the spirit of Rosh Hashanah when she said, "On the new year, I am not myself. I sense within me powers I'm usually unaware of. I'm not myself. I'm the person whom I ought to be. The grammar of Rosh Hashanah is simple. Its grammar is in the first person singular. I am, I can be, I ought to be, I will be. Rosh Hashanah can set a mood, provide a context. You must provide the specifics. Rosh Hashanah displayed a simple message. You have within you, each of us carries within, a capacity for moral courage. It is strange that a low estimate we are prepared to make of ourselves, in part at least because we desire to promote our egos, our vanities, and our pretensions. We act ignobly because we argue that the world is an evil and a wicked place. I've heard men say, when I'm in business, I cannot always walk a straight line. I must be callous in my dealings with employers and competitors. Business is a dog-eat-dog enterprise. Such rationalization implies two things. First, an awareness that if life were somehow different, we could be better people. And that the way to act is a compromise of what we know to be the right with the person whom we might become. Secondly, we can justify these compromises by a harsh judgment about the world we live in. Are these assumptions justified? I wonder. If we look clearly at the business world, we'll find many open-handed, open-hearted individuals, men and women, of the highest probity, whose word is their bond. Every man who cuts corners or who sets self-interest above honor, there are hundreds who won't. You think of those whom you have heard justify niggardly gifts on the ground that their friends give similar gifts. I wonder how we conceive that all our institutions of learning and healing are financed and are sponsored. Have we forgotten the hundreds who give largely and sacrificially of time and self? What of those who say, I pay my taxes, I'm a law-abiding citizen, I have done my share, and that's enough? I do not want to work in any of your institutions or in any of your boards. I will not do more than my share. Well, someone is staffing and supporting and volunteering in those institutions, or else they will never survive. People give of their energies, their time, their talents. That this community and every community can be a fine and healthy society. No, we cannot justify a low estimate of ourselves by a low estimate of our neighbors. When we look about us, the circle of our friends and our families, we will find goodness shining in many faces. We ought not allow our desire to justify weakness to set a low standard for our conduct. It simply isn't so. Do not accept the argument that man is only an animal, only a step removed from the jungle. Or that what passes for virtue is simply a cunning disguise in which the more able hide their self-serving. I wonder, may I revert to the simile of the atom with which we began? Who have never seen disembodied virtue, or goodness, or sympathy, or compassion in the abstract? No one ever has. But then I have never seen the subatomic particles of energy whose discovery brought us into the atomic age. We cannot see virtue in the abstract. We see it in action. We see it in the mother caring for her infant. We see it in the father training up his child in the way that he should go. We see it in the minister being called in his parish, the doctor making hospital rounds, the teacher in the classroom. We We send in friends who are sympathetic and solicitous of our joys and of our grief. We send in the invalid whose lips are sealed against expressing pain, lest it burden another. And remember, we said in the youth, determine fulfilled talents, but it means putting off today's pleasures for more years of training. But remember, the argument that man is only an animal has two parts. Not only that human virtue does not exist, part one, but that what passes for virtue is really a travesty of virtue. No one can deny that charity is sometimes given out of the desire for public acclaim or public approval. We cannot deny that sympathy is sometimes an expiation of guilt, or that some are calculating in their virtue. And yet, let us for a moment look not without, but within, not in another's actions, but our own. Let us admit that we can be calculating in our kindness, but also that we have moments of instinctive, impulsive sympathy. There have been times when we have given of ourselves without thought, without premeditation, simply because we felt another's hurt or rejoiced in another's sadness. The best of our actions are not calculated for premeditated ends, but they are an instinctive upwelling of the spiritual power within us. We have to think more highly of ourselves. We have to realize that we have an obstinate capacity for goodness, even for saintliness. However hard we work at perfecting our character, we all have within us untapped reservoirs of spiritual energy. Someone's told me, I wish your assessment were true. I wish that most people, most of the time, were good people. But reading the daily papers, watching the news on television, this does not seem to be the case. Pick up a clothing newspaper. You will see the pathological ill and the demented. A mother drugging her own children. Young sadists murdering their drug competitors. How can you speak of the potential goodness of man? How can you speak optimistically of the future? I wonder if the newspapers give us a clear view of the world about us. The newspapers need sensation, shock, and the startling But for every sensational and shocking act, there are hundreds of acts of simple goodness. Some quote the poet, how are men filling a spiritual wasteland? Or drained of moral energy, callous and self-seeking. But think of your own life. Think of other good people, thoughtful, considerate people, who work diligently and honorably, people who join good causes so we can have a better society. You are surrounded by love, the love of your parents, the love of your children, the love of your family, the love of friends. Doesn't this tell us something about the proportion of good and evil in our world? No one can claim that we have met the challenge which the angel truth set before us. But certainly, many people, most people, are using some of their energies to meet these challenges. Could we not describe a chronicle of heroism, at least as significant as a chronicle of hollow men? I see in my mind's eye a surgeon volunteering aid in his service to the jungles, in the jungles of Asia. I see a young black American silently marching past the jeers of white bigots who claim equal rights and opportunities. I see trained young people spending years bringing modern science and organization and technology and law to the forgotten of the world. I see a young Israeli farmer scratching greenness out of the barren desert in the burning, cruel sun to feed his people. I see so much greatness in life, greatness in you, greatness in all of us. I emphasize the past in each of us to counter the despair and frustration in many lives. Many have given up the fight, of course, retired into a protective cocoon of routine. They will not leave their narrow circle of friends, involve themselves in the community, because that will demand too much of them. They say, let us live quietly. We are not bad people, but the weight of the world is too much for any of us. Please, just leave us alone. But I cannot. We cannot and must not be left alone. We cannot allow the willful and the self-willed to control by default the machinery of government. We cannot guarantee the world's peace and safety. This much can be guaranteed. And if we retreat within the doors of our homes, there will certainly be disaster. We need men and women who will walk on the stage of the world, fight the just fight, preach the gospel of humanity, brave the arrows aimed at them by selfish interests. We need to accept the simple truth that we are the makers of the future, that the future is in our hands. Where is the factory of peace? The nurturers, and homes filled with love, shining with the example of good parents. That's where strong-hearted and strong-minded citizens are created. Where is our future? It's in the classroom, where we are equipped with knowledge, the tools of learning, where the citizen is formed. Character is sought through every relationship in which we are involved. Every helpful act we take contributes to peace. Working with a neighbor, we help to destroy the prejudices which divide. By injecting fact into emotional dispute, we calm jangled nerves and encourage more mature judgment. We are the makers of the future, each in our own way, using our unique talents within our circle of daily associations. We think beyond our leisure and our luxuries, each of us can be the maker of a grand future. We're not hollow men tilling the spiritual wasteland, but men and women filled with a divine spark, filled with unbelievable spiritual energies, tilling the fields of peace and promise on this Rosh Hashanah. On the first birthday of the world, God placed before man a rich world, a beautiful world, and he said, this is your world and your challenge. Intellectually and scientifically, we have met a great part of that challenge. We have learned and are learning to respect nature. We have learned and are learning to control the spread of disease. We have learned how to provide food sufficient to the needs of the world. We have gained necessary insights into religion, philosophy, and law, which we need to regulate our activities justly. On this birthday of the world, we need faith, courage, and determination to apply our knowledge wisely. We must allow the spirit within to be fully expressed and use our God-given powers for God-stipulated purposes. They will sense not only the person we have been and are, but the person that we ought to be. Today we examine not only the world that was and is, but the world that can be. If we are the people that we ought to be, surely the world will be the world which we know it can be. Amen.